Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
I took her out. It was a Friday night. I woke alone to get the feeling right. We started making out and she took off my pants. But then I turned on the TV, and that's about the time she walked away from me. Nobody likes you when you're 23. And I still more abuse my TV shows. What the hell is ADD? My friends say I should act my age. What's my age again? What's my age again?
When you go to a tournament, for people that know travel volleyball and basketball tournaments, you usually wind up in a parking lot with a big giant building, and your kid plays a game, and then you have 2 hours to wait for the next game. What's going to happen here is your kid plays a game. You have 2 hours to roam around downtown Pensacola, get something to eat, go to a museum, take the ferry, and see the water and explore instead of just sitting in your car charging your cell phone waiting for the next game.
All right, so this is Robert Fabro, the president of Witzel Green, the builder who is looking at getting that warehouse 4 on the port and, you know, basically turning it into this multi-use indoor sports facility. Pickleball has been the primary focus, but it's also, you know, for like convention space or for there's other things that they have been talking about using it for. But that's the main one, obviously. And, you know, volleyball and basketball. And there's this weird kind of indoor soccer with a name that I can never remember. It starts with an F. It's you know, it's a fast-paced indoor 5-on-5 soccer or something. Anyway, but what he's saying is that, look, this is not just a matter of giving us this kind of, you know, jumping on the bandwagon of pickleball. This would actually make us unique in the realm of sports tournaments and sports tourism because most of the places where they have these kinds of facilities are in the middle of nothing. On the other hand, ours would be right in the middle of our downtown where it would be great for economic development for, you know, the, well, maybe economic development is maybe, it's a maybe, but it's good for tourism. It's good for people spending money because they're going to, you know, they're going to wander, obviously, past Atlas and Fish House, and they're going to wander over to Palo Fox, and they're going to do things there, and then they're going to come back to the tournament because a lot of times these tournaments turn into kind of vacations for families or for couples.
It will put Pensacola on the top for these youth sports tournaments because people will want to come here because there's something else to do. And these, as most of you know, these youth tournaments have turned into many vacations for families, and that's how they're being treated.
And so D.C. Reeves, the mayor, of course, he did not create this project, but he has been, you know, favorable to it and has been kind of shepherding it across the finish line.
I ran for 14 months talking about building place in a community and that the new battlefront of economic development isn't necessarily shovel-ready land or site selection. It's how do you build a really, really cool place to live? And talent is more remote than ever, is more nimble than ever. And you want talent to live here because they've got cool amenities.
The more cool, interesting, enjoyable things we have, the more people will want to be here. So that is his vision of economic development, that economic development is not just making it a good place where companies want to come, but a good place where people want to come. And if people want to come, well, guess what? People will come. And also companies will want to be here because their people will want to come. And so that's the kind of, call it soft economic development if you want to, instead of, you know, hard economic development. But that's kind of his view. And he says, look, going to all these conferences with mayors, especially in DC, in Washington, D.C., this is something that any mayor would sign up for.
What I know is there are councils and mayors all over this country that would sit at the same dais and talk about bonding millions and millions of dollars to do this exact project and then operate it, if you fingers cross, at only a little bit of a subsidy. You know, we have someone here that's willing to take on that risk of the operation, that's willing to hand us a building that is in disrepair as it sits now currently and fix it up. Those are, and in a worst case scenario, that's fixing up a building that we own. And, you know, I think that makes this a no-brainer.
So it's refurbishing the building, which we will still own, even though they will have the operational lease on it, obviously. And you get this amenity, and you're going to move the perimeter back for security for the port in, basically conjunction with what the port study had said to do. And so it fits with the port study to put things at the northern end of the port into public use areas instead of like now where they're, you know, very underutilized assets for the port. But there is another side, and the other side is, hey, this is Pensacola. This is not just any city, USA, and this is a port city. This is a maritime city. This is a city whose identity and history are so tied up with port and commerce on the water that we hate anything that jeopardizes the potential that that port represents, because once you carve it off, you can't carve it back on. And that was a concern raised by Jimmy Coe.
I support Mr. Favreau's concept. It'd be wonderful for Pensacola to have a pickleball facility. I just don't think it should be at the port. The expense of the port is what we're talking about. Long-term investment, years and years of effort to bring the port where it is now.
And the way I understand it is, you know, Jimmy Coe, owner of Pensacola, Pensacola Hardware, you know, they use that for storage a lot of times. And indoor storage space is somewhat limited at the port. That's something that Clark Merritt said was true, that that's something that they would have to work around. He's the port director. Buddy McCormick, who's, you know, I've known him for some of these. I'll tell you what, I was in favor of this deal. And then when I was listening to the critics, my respect for and friendships with so many of the critics is what gave me pause on this deal. Because, you know, if Jimmy Coe is against it, I'm like, oh, okay. If Buddy McCormick is against it from Offshore Inland, who I've known for forever down here.
Maritime transport is essential to the world's economy, as over 90% of the world's trade is carried by sea and is by far the most effective way to move and mass goods and raw materials around the world. Paddle Club of Pensacola supports the concept of public multi-use facilities in the downtown area. It benefits economic growth in the community at non-industrial areas and not at the Port of Pensacola industrial site.
Of course, what a lot of folks have been saying is it's a great idea to put it at the Community Maritime Park, which would require a build instead of a refurbish, right? Okay. But, you know, Wetzel Green, they build stuff. Okay. So maybe that's a better option. Janet Walsh, she spoke. I didn't know her before, but she sounds like a really sharp lady. She was a U.S. Merchant Marine. She's with the Propeller Club. And she said, it's not just port future, it's security issues for something like the port.
When the news of what happened at NAS in Building 633, where I taught, came across news radio, within 4 minutes of happening, due to their strong ties to the community, I froze. That was an unfortunate incident. As we know, things happen that we don't expect. That was a vetted, secure facility with a vetted person. Putting something that has additional public access, and especially tournaments, we don't have a way to support law enforcement for the land and water security about who's coming and going so close to our maritime asset. So I think for this reason, I support the others that have said a great, great concept, but just the wrong venue.
And that was a theme for the folks from the Propeller Club and the critics who got up and said, look, this is a great idea for somewhere else. And there are many somewhere else's. Let's put it somewhere else. This is agreed. This is an underutilized asset at the moment. You know, it's basically been short-term storage. No long-term leases there for a long time. And yet, we are short on storage space at the port. And who knows what future need might manifest. And once you've given that building away to the public and changed the perimeter of the port, you know, you can't change it back. You lose the rail on the west side of that building, even though that rail has not been used in forever and actually has a building on top of it that, you know, like there's a paint shed or something that's on top of that rail, so you can't really use it. But that rail isn't essential anyway. Like, there's other alternatives to use for the rail. So Matthew Pate from Pate Stevedore, he says, you know, this can go anywhere. There's just one port. Okay. Mike Ensley, on the other hand, of course, with Pensacon, he says there's a huge potential here for this because the Bay Center, though it looks like a big building, is actually a very small space surrounded by a big building. And so we lose out on a lot of opportunities because there's no convention space. And this would be convention space and certainly additional space for something like Pensacon to operate on. So a real conflict of visions for the future of the port. Again, the port study said, yes, the northern areas can be carved off and used for, you know, civilian things. The southern two-thirds or so of the port space should be protected. And I found myself incredibly torn on this. I really did. I was in favor of it moderately. My respect for the people who are against it pushed me into the negative. And it was really just, I'll be honest, I was very uncertain which way I would have voted on this. Okay, that was my. Now, listen to Amy Miller talk about this and how that building hasn't been used long term and limited storage space. And it is, of course, compatible with the port study that came out a few years ago and the way that rail functions. And, you know, my own tours of the port and thinking about how much use or unuse is happening there. And I think it kind of came down to if it's been this long and there's been no reason for that building to be essential to port operations, and if Amy Miller and Clark Merritt say that we can continue being everything the port's supposed to be without that space, that was kind of the tipping point for me. Because we have a habit, as Allison Patton, by the way, pointed out, that, you know, sometimes in this town, we take a look at a good thing and turn it down because it's not as good as the imaginary, even better thing that might eventually someday come to pass.
I also think we've been sort of guilty as a city, sometimes as a city government, that we have good proposals. We think maybe there's something better, or maybe we're giving up something and we don't move forward and we lose opportunity.
Yeah, and that, why is Community Maritime Park basically empty? You know, still, because of that, because of dithering by the city council over good proposals that weren't quite exactly what they wanted, and now the market's changed and you can't have it. Or at least that's what it looks like. So I feel the people who are against, I certainly feel the people who are for, and I probably would have been a vote for by about a 55 to 45 split in my own mind, because I do share the concern about the future of the port and the promises that this would not lead to, you know, this wouldn't be camel's nose under the tent, that this wouldn't lead to further port facility erosion past what the study had said a couple of years ago. That's the one thing that made it acceptable to me. But I absolutely understand the concern that, well, this is phase one of the basically civilianizing of the court of the port, which I do not support at all. So, you know, 5 years from now, one side's going to be right. We'll know then, like a lot of these things turn out to be. 523 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. By the way, it did pass 7-0, so it is happening. Okay, so it did pass. It is happening. 7-0. I'm Andrew McKay.
Spring is a great time of the year for gardening, whether it's fertilizing the lawn, pruning, planting shrubs and summer blooming plants, and of course, tending to that vegetable garden. This is Mike Wiggins. If you've got spring gardening questions, we've got answers on the News Radio Garden Line every Tuesday morning at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. And if you miss us on Tuesday, then catch the Encore Edition every Saturday morning at 9. It's sponsored by Pensacola Hardware, Blue Sky Landscaping, and Barnes Feed Store.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor, every blank page is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with tools and expertise to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. For advice on smart PCs powered by Intel vPro that's built for business, call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
You can listen to News Radio Pensacola on the radio at 92.3, 95.3, or AM 1620. Online at newsradio923.com or on our mobile app.
I gotta tell you, first of all, you look marvelous. He does, he does. Up close is something different. It's the makeup, the, you know, it's just marvelous.
One day out of the year, play a little Daddy Yankee. Got some of those fabulous Cadillacs for later. We got some, we got all kinds of stuff. We got Mexican music light. I'll just put it that way. It is because today is Cinco de Mayo.
It's on the 5th this year.
It is on the 5th this year. It always, I don't know why, it always catches me by surprise. I literally, yesterday, I was reading something, and they were talking about Cinco de Mayo was tomorrow, and, you know, and I'm like, no, it's not already? Same date every year. It's not like Labor Day, where it's a floater. You know, it's not like Memorial Day or, you know,
no,
Easter.
Right, right. It's a Christmas. It's
right.
Always May 5th.
It's always
right.
It's the same date every year. How can you miss it? Well, I don't know. You just do. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
President Biden expected to nominate Air Force General Charles Q. Brown Jr. to be the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That, according to a report by Politico, Brown is currently the Air Force Chief of Staff, and if nominated and confirmed by the Senate, he would be the second black officer to serve as Joint Chiefs Chairman after late Army General Colin Powell. Attorney General Merrick Garland says the conviction Thursday of four Proud Boys members on seditious conspiracy charges shows the DOJ will do everything in its power to defend democracy. Those men were charged in connection to their roles in the January 6th riot. Vice President Kamala Harris sat down with the CEOs of big tech firms yesterday to talk about the risks of artificial intelligence. The White House announced initiatives targeting the potential dangers. Apparently, President Biden also briefly joined the conversation to tell the CEOs that what they're doing has both enormous potential and enormous danger.
Oh, I felt like there was going to be a clip coming. Was I wrong? Did I hear that wrong?
Well, it kind of could sound like that. Okay. I could see that. Yeah, gotcha. No.
So what President Biden said yesterday was very powerful. Mm-hmm.
Kind of. Kind of very powerful, somewhat.
Thanks so much, David. I appreciate it. 527 on News Radio 92.3. The Escambia County Sheriff's Office Narcotics Unit, along with members of B South, I don't know what that is, but this is off of their Facebook page, ECSO. Search warrant served a hotel room in 3900 block of Brancas. And during the search, they found, you know, 31 grams of meth, a third of a kilo of crack. And just doing the math, right? 339 grams, a third of a kilo. Kilo is 1,000 grams, In case you'd never figured that out. You know, when they talk about a key, I'm so embarrassed for me that I'm explaining this to people. But, you know, sometimes people don't put that together because we're Americans. We don't do metric.
The metric system, yeah.
All right, so 424 grams of marijuana, all right, and 323 grams of fentanyl. That's the big one. That's a third of a kilo of fentanyl and a stolen firearm. So they were all charged, prosecuted, and it was in a hotel room, remember, in a hotel room. So this was a drug house in a hotel room that they've basically taken out of commission. So good. You know, that's good. 437-1620. Oh, this is kind of interesting. You remember I told you about how Utah had put in place a law that requires age verification. They're the second state. This is for getting online and seeing porn, okay? And they're the second state to do this. Well, they are now being sued by the Free Speech Coalition, which is basically an organization that represents pornographers, don't you think? Anyway, the Free Speech Coalition says that Utah's new law unfairly discriminates against certain kinds of speech, singling out pornography as the one thing that you have to show ID or prove ID for in order to get online and access it, and intrudes on the privacy of individuals who want to view sexually explicit materials. And the plaintiffs have asked a federal judge to bar enforcement of the law until their legal challenge is resolved. Well, you know what's funny about that? Is we already have laws on the books for things like you can't go into an area that sells pornography if you're under 18 or 21, maybe in some cases, but I think it's mostly 18. Anyway, and you have to show proof of ID. So there's already well-established legal precedent that you can discriminate against minors for this socially beneficial purpose, much like you can discriminate against people buying cigarettes, people buying alcohol and tobacco products, right? Okay, so the problem that they're having is they're already behind on the legal precedents, right? The only question is the issue of internet access and whether the internet should be, you know, completely free range compared to the in-person, where we have long established the principle that you can prohibit minors from being in certain kinds of environments. So I would expect them to lose this case. I would expect this case to basically go nowhere. You know, there's always a little bit of a coin flip whenever you roll a case. David, what do you have coming up, sir?
Matt Gaetz has filed a national Stand Your Ground bill. More after Fox.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Former President Trump is given until Sunday to say he will testify at the civil battery and defamation case against him in New York. He told reporters in Ireland he probably will attend and confront his accuser. Otherwise, testimony's done.
Jurors hearing former President Donald Trump call a woman who accused him of rape a, quote, nut job and mentally sick in a video recording that was shown during the trial for a federal lawsuit. E. Jean Carroll alleges that Trump raped her in an upscale New York department store dressing room in 1996. His lawyers say he will not be testifying.
Fox's John Saucier. At least eight people are killed in the second mass shooting in Serbia in 2 days.
A suspect arrested, believed to have fired randomly at people in three different villages. The violence comes just a day after a 13-year-old boy opened fire at his school, killing eight students and a guard in Belgrade.
Fox, Jill Nato, no word on a motive for either of these mass shootings, the first in Serbia in 10 years. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 68 degrees. It's partly cloudy in Pensacola this morning. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Congressman Matt Gaetz has introduced a National Stand Your Ground Act. He says it would codify Florida's Stand Your Ground law at the federal level.
There's no reason protections for a victim should end at the threshold or the doorstep. Law-abiding people shouldn't have the duty to retreat from anywhere that they are legally allowed to be if someone is trying to commit a felony against them.
And those comments made by Gaetz back in 2021. Gaetz tells Fox News, too many states continue to maintain the duty to retreat. Says it's time to change that. Oklahoma's Mark Wayne Mullen filed a companion bill in the U.S. Senate. A career fair scheduled later this month for anybody interested in working for Escambia County. The county, in partnership with career source Escarosa, is hosting the career fair Thursday, May 18th from 9 until 2 at the Pensacola Bay Center. Candidates will have the chance to speak with various department representatives, including Public Works, Corrections, and ECAT. You'd also be able to apply for a job in person there. To see a full list of open positions, visit the county website at myescambia.com/careers. The Escambia County Sheriff's Office says they recovered a lot of drugs and made three arrests in a hotel room yesterday. Joe Ford with more.
Deputies say 45-year-old Marcus Williams, 26-year-old Whitney Bailey, and 32-year-old Colton Sims are all behind bars and facing numerous drug charges. The Sheriff's Office Narcotics Unit conducted a search warrant on a hotel room on Barrancas Avenue and found over 320 grams of fentanyl, 31 grams of meth, and 339 grams of crack cocaine. Also recovered marijuana and a stolen firearm. Investigators say Williams was out on bond for several trafficking charges related to the Operation Blue Christmas drug sweep. Joe Ford, News Radio 92.3.
Florida ranked as one of the best states. U.S. News this week releasing its annual list of the best states. Florida coming in at number 10. But the Sunshine State did rank number one in their rankings in education. Utah ranked as the best state overall, Washington number two, and dead last was Louisiana, coming in all the way at number 50. You can see the full rankings online, usnews.com. It is 534 News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast.
We're going to be seeing a nice morning, but a rain chance moves in as we go into the afternoon and evening hours. 30% chance of rain overall, high near 79. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 68. 30% chance of rain for your Saturday. Showers and thunderstorms possible with a high near 80 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 66. We're going to have a rain chance drop a little bit for Sunday with a 20% chance of showers, high near 82. Sunday night, temperatures drop near 69. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR TV Weather App. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you, Brooke. 68 in Pensacola, 71 in Gulf Breeze, 63 in Milton. Our next news at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne. News Radio 92.3.
News Radio Pensacola is your source for informative, local, dependable news and talk. Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay gets you a breakdown of the local issues from the county commission meetings to new developments. Pep Talk gets you local expert opinions on everything from gardens to HVAC. Brian Kilmeade interviews the national newsmakers. Dave Ramsey helps you become debt-free. Pensacola Right Now infotains on your drive home. Local and Fox News at the top and bottom of every hour. And traffic on the fives during your drive time. News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
When it comes to precious metals, there's only one place to consider, and that is Emerald Coast Coins. They're the local leader in dealing with coins and jewelry. Gold, silver, diamonds, and sterling silver. Emerald Coast Coins buys, sells, and trades. And for the past 15 years, customers from all over the Gulf Coast have trusted Emerald Coast Coins for the best estimates and prices in town. Stop in today. They're on Creighton Road, right across from Tom Thumb. Emerald Coast Coins.
The Pensacola Expert Panel is the home of experts of local businesses in all shapes and sizes. Today, at 10, two experts in the Pensacola area bring their entertaining and informative points of view regarding everything about advertising. Don't miss hearing Dick Appleyard from the Appleyard Agency and Jim Grimes Jr. with Southern Media as they discuss why your business should advertise. It's everything about advertising. Today, at 10, on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3 is Pensacola's radio home for informative, local, and dependable news and talk. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Morning, 5:36 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Yesterday, we had a chance to talk to Mike Wood. He is the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Hey, Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Good morning, Candy.
Good morning. I know. So the big news at the moment, of course, is that we have the courthouse is shut down because of a suspicious package, right?
Yes, sir. That's happened before. The sheriff's office is down there handling that situation. It's happened at that location. It's happened at the two courthouses on Palafox before. And a lot of times what we found, especially the last time I was down on that one, was that there's a lot of transients in the area. They've got a lot of baggage, and sometimes they'll drop one and leave it there. And, in fact, the last one that I was on, the individual was standing next to me and said, that's my bag over there. I just couldn't carry everything across the street, and now I'm afraid to go get it. So, most of the time there's nothing to it. In fact, every time there's been nothing to it, there's a explosive detection dog coming from the airport to take a quick sniff of that package, and I'm sure the courthouse will be up and running at open of business today.
All right, very good. And, you know, what do you have? What do they do? Like, you've got something, you're not sure what it is. You got to handle it like it's a threat. You can't just go kick it, you know, and see. What is the protocol? I mean, we've all seen the movies, movies get it wrong, so go ahead.
Yeah, they've closed Balen Street right now, which is exactly what needs to be done until they can verify the package is a threat or not. So that's what they're doing right now, and you treat every package as a threat until you know that it's not.
Exactly right. Very good. Okay. Other stuff that we've got going on that looks like it's in the budget, so fingers crossed. Now, it's listed as Escambia County, but it's gunshot detection, so I assume this is the spot shotter technology that both the sheriff and Chief Randall have been interested in acquiring for, I think it's $850,000 we've got. Again, if it doesn't get vetoed by the governor, right?
That's correct. The plan is it's going to be launched in a 3-square-mile area. That area is yet to be determined. Both agencies will participate in this. I believe it'll be done out of a real-time crime center at the sheriff's office, uh-huh. And we're anxious to get that up and running and just to see it grow.
Very good. Yeah, and that's something, you know, I know Chief Randall is a big believer in technology. We've been talking about this a bunch with the sheriff. They've got it over Mobile, and it seems to work very effectively, which the big advantage is that it gets you immediate response and you know exactly where to go, right?
That's exactly right. And sometimes there's been shots fired before and people just ignore it. And we, you know, those calls right there are scary because we don't know if somebody got hit or not, and then we never get the call. With ShotSpotter, that won't ever happen again. We'll get the call anyway. We'll know exactly where to go and provide help if needed.
And it's much better than your human ear at discerning whether it was gunshot, backfire, firecracker, you know, all. Because I know, I've heard things outside of the window, and you hear one, you're like, meh. You know, it's because it doesn't. I don't distinguish it as being a gun versus somebody just doing fireworks. And so I think, okay, it's fine. If I hear 5 or 6, well, we're going to make a call, you know, but it's got to sound right. And the spot shotter is much better than the ear figuring that out, right?
Yeah, we had an incident yesterday near the Global School where a sound like that went off. Folks thought it might have been gunshots, but it turned out it was a transformer that blew up when the truck hit a tree. So hopefully ShotSpotter can dissect through that information and give us the information on shots fired only. I believe the technology is there in situations like that.
Outstanding. You're on Channel 3 talking about the unlocked vehicles getting basically not broken into but opened and then stolen has been a problem recently in the city, right?
Yeah, it has. And it's a problem all over the country, but we've had 12 in 30 days. And they were mostly in North Hill, East Hill, and the Avenues area. Every one of them were left unlocked. All of them had the key or the key fob left in them. And it's like I said yesterday, we understand that car alarms cost money. The braces you can put across the steering wheel to lock it cost money. But to take your key fob out of the car and lock it is free and very effective. So, we've said it, the sheriff's office has said it so many times. We're going to continue to do it to remind people to please lock the car and please take the key out of it. And hopefully things like that won't happen, because a lot of times when these cars are stolen, they end up being involved in violent crimes.
All right, I got to ask you this question because people laugh at me. I have a club. My wife has a club. We had our cars broken into, 15 years ago in Arizona, and we've had clubs ever since. I don't put it on all that often, but, and when I'm in a place where I think there might be a risk or whatever, do clubs actually discourage thieves?
Well, you have to ask them. I don't know. I don't see a lot of those anymore, and that was the only other thing I could think of right off the bat besides the car alarm that cost money.
Right.
And obviously, you just saw, I couldn't remember the name of the thing. So, any attempt to keep your car, to keep it from being stolen, is better than nothing.
Well, and I figure you are always explaining how thieves are like water. They pursue the path of least resistance, so they're going to go into the unlocked car. Well, an unlocked car with a club on it, or in my case, a locked car with a club on it. And my view has never been that it's going to prevent them from taking a car. I just want to prevent them from taking mine. I want them to take the next car over, right? That's always been my theory.
Yeah. But if everybody thought like you, we would have a lot less cars stolen.
Oh, weird. Isn't that interesting? Obviously, the skate park is opening, just this week, just 2 days ago. And, two questions. Have you had any issues yet? And what are the kind of main things that you guys are, going to pay attention to when you're policing that area?
Well, it's like all the other parks, it closes at night, opens up during the day, and we understand there's a lot of folks over there using it a lot. There were yesterday too, and it's the lights are on over there. Folks are having a good time, and we're going to leave that alone at the moment until until we have to change things. And right now, everybody's been great. The only issue that we've had so far is on Jackson Street. We may have to put up some signage on the side, on the north side where the police department is, to not park, because officers coming out of there are having a tough time looking left and making sure the traffic is clear. But other than that, there's been no issues. We're glad to see the park open, and how cool it was to see Mayors Hayward, Robinson, and Reeves over there to be there during the ribbon cutting, because all three of them worked hard on getting that park put in.
Oh, most definitely. No, most definitely. Hey, one quick thing I wanted to ask you about. There was an interesting story, semi-interesting story. P&J carried it, but it wasn't written here. It was one of their USA Today Network affiliates. It had to do with the enforcement of the noise ordinance, and the headline was, black drivers getting pulled over more often for the noise ordinance. And it turns out in the story it was having to do a lot more with South Florida, and as I read it, some kind of open air taxi services or something. I don't know. I didn't take a lot of the particulars away from it as meaningful, but what I did think is, how has the noise ordinance enforcement been going here in Pensacola? Because that was something you and I talked about quite a bit when this came into play. The warnings and the distance and how far away you are from the car. Has it been something that your officers have been enforcing an awful lot?
It hasn't been a big deal for us. When we see a violation, we're going to stop the person and ask them to turn it down, and 99% of the time they're going to do that. So it hasn't been a real big issue for us.
And I wanted to give you guys a chance to brag for a second also, because I know historically that you have really implemented a lot of things to try to track traffic stops by race, because this has been a longstanding complaint about police agencies across the country, is that, black motorists get stopped more often as racial profiling, and you guys in the PPD have worked really, really hard, as long as I've lived here, to, prevent that, correct against that, right?
Yeah, the truth of the matter is, we couldn't care less about the race of the person driving the vehicle or committing a crime. All we care about is there was a crime or a violation committed. And you're right, to prevent issues like that, we have what's called TSDR, or traffic stop data reporting. And if an officer was selecting a certain race, then that would rise to the top really quick. It would be red flagged. We could see that and take care of that that individual, take care of that problem. So since we started doing that, we can see it's very clear to anybody that wants to look at racial profiling is something that just does not go on at the Pensacola Police Department.
Excellent. Well, I would always like to end with a cop myth or a did you know. Do you have one for me today?
Yeah, I do. And you start here. I want you to guess on which cars, because we've all heard it before, which cars or color of cars tend to get pulled over and ticketed the most.
Oh, well, the belief is red cars. Red cars get pulled over all the time, especially sports cars.
That is the belief, but the truth is it's white cars, and it's not because white grabs the attention or because drivers of white cars are especially reckless. It's simply that 77.1% of all cars being driven today are on the grayscale spectrum, meaning that they're mostly white, black, and shades of gray in between. And that's simply why there are just more of them out there.
Okay, so white car drivers aren't worse, and you don't catch them more frequently because you don't like white cars. It's just that there's a lot of them, and therefore they get a lot of tickets. Okay, and it's not so but not red cars.
No, it's not red cars. There's just not as many of them out there.
Interesting. All right. Mike Wood, he is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. As always, Mike, thank you for doing what you do to keep us safe, to keep us informed, and we'll talk to you again next week, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and let's lock those cars.
Absolutely. 546 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Speaking of those cars, if you're getting ready to buy that next week, come on.
No, I love that. Yeah, look at you tying it all together. Okay, but to be fair, every time I've had a car broken into, it's because I left it unlocked.
Yeah.
Four times through my life.
You know what they say about that?
That I'm an idiot?
They didn't break into it.
It's an invitation.
That's right. It's not breaking if it's open.
So anyway, those cars, you say?
Yeah, that's right, about those cars. If you're thinking about buying the next one, Frontier Motors is a great place to do it. Listen, you know that Dave Ramsey always recommends buy a semi-used car and then drive it till the wheels go off. Same thing I recommend. It's what I've done personally in my life. I bought a gently used Honda Accord. It had 27,000 miles on it, and I drove it until I had 330, and I sold it running. And I have a Civic right now that I bought with, I don't remember, 20 or 30,000 miles on it, and it's got 190 now, I think, something like that. Our Honda Odyssey, the one we bought at Frontier, replaced a Grand Caravan that was pushing 200,000 miles after 15 years, and we had bought that used. Like, that's how we do, because we believe in this philosophy. And those are the kinds of vehicles that Frontier specializes in. Almost new, you know, 1, 2, 3 years old, low miles, great condition, great prices, and then you can drive it forever and then come back to them in 15 years, which is always my plan. I'll see you today and again in a decade and a half. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years. Right behind that big buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Remember when washing machines were made in America, were solidly built, and actually got your clothes clean? They aren't the thing of the past. They are Speed Queen, and they are available at Tops Appliance. Speed Queen washer and dryers combine durability and technology into the best washers and dryers in the world. Speed Queen will change the way you think about washing machines. They're built to last longer and deliver exceptional wash results. Unlike many other washers and dryers with plastic parts, Speed Queen uses commercial-grade steel and porcelain components designed to give you at least 25 years of reliable, trouble-free operation. That's why they come with lifetime warranties, the best warranties in the business. See store for warranty details. Speed Queen washers and dryers are built to work and built to last. If you want durability, innovation, and perfectly done laundry the first time, then you want Speed Queen. See these great Speed Queen washers and dryers for yourself at Tops Appliance on Highway 90 in Milton, just east of Stewart Street.
Enroll today in summer or fall classes at Pensacola State College and join the 95% of PSC students who are going to school loan-free. PSC offers over 350 scholarships and more than 100 programs to choose from, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees in a format that best works for you. Plus, your education courses are guaranteed to transfer to Florida public universities. So don't wait. Register for summer or fall classes today online at pensacolastate.edu. Go here, get there, Pensacola State College.
Join Alex Gardner with Pensacola Children's Chorus Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Alex will be telling us all about Showtime, their annual end-of-the-season extravaganza, and singing the summer interactive camps that are coming up. He'll be taking your calls and questions Monday at 10 with the Pensacola Children's Chorus on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Bands on the Beach is back. Bring a lawn chair or a towel, but no pads or glass, and enjoy live music at the stage on Pensacola Beach. There's plenty of room to spread out and enjoy the sand, the sunset, and great live music every Tuesday night at 7. This week, Grits and Greens takes the stage. A powerful four-piece band best described as rock and roll with a soulful and jam-heavy delivery. It's Bands on the Beach every Tuesday night at 7, brought to you by the Santa Rosa Island Authority.
It's the biggest party of the year, unfiltered, off-kilter, and a little unhinged with PLT's Cabaret Off-Broadway. Tomorrow, Cabaret's Playhouse theme transforms the theater and surrounding block into an indoor-outdoor entertainment complex, seamlessly fusing local art and celebration to showcase art as the life of the party. Come immerse yourself in the best of Pensacola's art scene. Get your tickets now before it sells out at the Pensacola Little Theater box office or online at PensacolaLittleTheater.com.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Saturdays, you get the Garden Line Encore at 9. At Home with Gary Sullivan at 10. Swan Capital at 1. Let's Go Pensacola at 4.
Buenos dias.
Pop and Taco.
El dembow lo canto con Honduras. Dicen una estrella, una figura. De Héctor aprendí la sabrosura. Nunca he visto una joya tan pura.
Esto pa' que quede lo que yo hago dura.
Con altura.
Demasiadas noches de travesura.
Con altura.
Vivo rápido y no tengo cura.
Con altura.
Y de joven pa' la sepultura.
Con altura.
Esto pa' que quede lo que yo hago dura.
Con altura.
Demasiadas noches de travesura.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed about a lot of Spanish Latin music is it doesn't always start at its best point in the song. It's kind of a gotta let it breathe a little bit. You know, that's what I've noticed about some of the songs I've been pulling for Cinco de Mayo is they're not just, you know, right out the gate the best. Some of them are, okay, but some of them you sit with them for a second, you kind of get into the vibe a little bit. I like that. I mean, it's different. So 4-3-7-16-20, happy Cinco de Mayo. What's your you're not much of a beer drinker. Are you?
No, I know. I'm sorry.
Do you have an alcohol that you associate?
A cerveza.
Okay.
No.
Tequila, margarita. No, not that either.
No, I know. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm such a loser.
What's the sweet Spanish wine? I can't remember the name of it.
Sangria.
There you go. Is that your? No.
No. I'm fine. I don't look down.
Excellent.
On. No. It's fine. Yeah, my drink is tacos. My drink is burritos. Yeah.
I will allow that answer.
Yeah, I don't have any problems in a Mexican restaurant, dude, or at a bar.
They never think, man, if only she'd also ordered alcohol. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3.
You see what happens.
I know. I do understand. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
David has to.
Does David have a liquor alcohol of preference to celebrate Cinco de Mayo?
You know, I'd probably celebrate it maybe with a dose of Keys today.
Light or dark?
The amber. The dose
good
of
for
amber.
You. That's
yeah,
the way to
that's
go.
That's my favorite.
That is one of the best beers out there for in that sort of genre.
There's a beer Dos Equis. Called Dos Equis?
Dos Equis.
Dos Equis. Yep.
Two X's. You've seen it.
I have.
I don't always drink.
That's my favorite.
I don't always drink beer, but when I do, Dos
oh,
Equis
it's that
dark.
Guy. Yeah.
There you
okay,
go.
Cool. That's my beer.
He's the world's most dangerous man, and David Wayne is the world's most informative man with the headlines.
Aha. Two senators sponsoring a bill to extend President Biden's authority to expel migrants that are seeking asylum without a hearing after Title 42 expires next week. The bill, authored by Arizona Independent Kyrsten Sinema and North Carolina Republican Tom Tillis, is aimed at holding off the expected surge at the southern border when the policy expires on May 11th. The bill would give Biden the authority to expel asylum seekers without being tied to public health. North Carolina lawmakers trying to pass a 12-week abortion ban. That bill headed to the desk of Democrat Governor Roy Cooper. He's called the bill awful and has promised to veto it. Yesterday, of course, was Star Wars Day, so it was a very fitting day for Carrie Fisher to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Her star was unveiled on May the 4th. It's near those of her Star Wars co-stars, Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill, and across the street from the star of her mother, Debbie Reynolds.
That's great. Is it common for stars to be posthumously awarded? I don't know the answer to this. I don't recall that being the case before. It might be very normal, and I'm just...
Yeah,
ignorant.
I'm not really sure myself.
I don't know. I thought they put handprints.
Right. Well, that's
the
thing. Well, at the Chinese theater, they do the. I don't think they do handprints for the stars. Man, I'm digging deep.
No, that's true.
Like,
that's grounded.
My one time I've been to a Hollywood Boulevard. So.
Oh, you've been there?
One time. I skateboarded on it, which is what you do. I don't know.
Of course it is.
Just
did
true.
You cut
ollies? My dad took me. We went when we were in junior high school, so we thought that was cool. Huh, we're skateboarding.
All right, so
that's cool.
I just looked it up on their website.
Yes, please.
And it says that one posthumous star is awarded per year.
Okay.
So right. One per year.
One per year. Yeah. There you go. Well, she's the one. So very good. Thank you for clarifying. I appreciate that.
The most informative man.
I told you he was.
Good job.
Well, thank you.
5:55 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, this is so, like, I wanted to share this with everybody, but I cannot. It's too long. But the Washington Times had an opinion piece that was written a while back. Okay, this was not just written yesterday, but I had not seen it before. So it was new to me, but just not new, you know, kind of like a frontier car. The article that was written here was written back in like maybe 2000 or something like that. So it's a little bit dated, but it does not matter. Okay, 2002. It was written by Jonathan Lass, the digital editor for the Washington Times at the time. The title of the opinion piece was The Case for the Empire. And it was an opinion editorial about, you know, you've got this all wrong. The Empire is the good guys and the rebels are the villains. I loved it. I'll read you a little bit because it was so entertaining. At the beginning of the Star Wars saga, the known universe is governed by the Galactic Republic. The Republic is controlled by a Senate, which in turn is run by an elected chancellor who's in charge of procedure but has little real power. Scores of thousands of planets are represented in the Galactic Senate. And as we first encounter, it is sclerotic and ineffectual. The Republic has grown over many millennia to the point where there are so many factions and disparate interests that it's simply too big to be governable. Even the Republic's staunchest supporters recognize this failing. In The Phantom Menace, quoting sources as you do from the canon, Queen Amidala admits, "It's clear to me now that the Republic no longer functions." In Attack of the Clones, young Anakin Skywalker observes that it simply doesn't work. The Senate moves so slowly that it's powerless to stop aggression between member states. In The Phantom Menace, a supraplanetary alliance, the Trade Federation, think of it as OPEC to the Galactic Republic's UN, invades a planet and all the Senate can agree to is to call for an investigation. It's set it up that, like, the Empire is a necessary reform to the bloated, weak, and ineffective Galactic Senate. It's great, the Republic. He goes on, "What's more, it's not clear that the Jedi, while autonomous, often work in tandem with the Senate, trying to smooth over conflicts and avoid quarrels, but the Jedi number only in the thousands. They cannot protect everyone. What's more, it's not clear they should be protecting anyone. The Jedi are George Lucas's great heroes, full of Zen wisdom and righteous power. They encourage people to use the Force, the mystical energy which is the source of their power. But the truth revealed in The Phantom Menace is that the Force isn't available to the rabble. The Force comes from midichlorians, tiny symbiotic organisms in people's blood, like mitochondria. The Force, as it turns out, is an inherited genetic trait. If you don't have the right blood, you don't get the Force, which makes the Jedi not a democratic militia, but a royalist Swiss guard."
Okay, that's right, though.
That's right.
I mean, they don't exist, but that's right.
And he goes on to talk about, like, the destruction of Alderaan is often cited as ipso facto proof of the Empire's evilness because it seems like mass murder, planetside even. But we know that Princess Leia is a known liar, lies about everything she says to Darth Vader. So when she says that Alderaan is peaceful, we have no weapons, how would you know that's true? She lied about everything else she said to him. And then it ends this way about the regional governors having direct control over territories under the Empire, Grand Moff Tarkin says. So in all of the time, and then you have the group of regional potentates, each with access to sizable armies and Star Destroyers running local affairs. And once the Emperor dies and their allegiance to him goes away, the galaxy is plunged into chaos. In all the time we spend observing the Rebel Alliance, we never hear of their governing strategy or their plans for a post-imperial universe. All we see are plots and fighting. Their victory over the Empire doesn't liberate the galaxy. It turns the galaxy into Somalia writ large, dominated by local warlords and answerable to no one, which makes the Rebels, George Lucas's heroes, an unimpressive crew of anarchic royals who wreck the galaxy so Princess Leia can have her tiara back. I'll take the Empire.
Your home for Brian Kilmeade, weekdays 11 to 1, is News Radio 92.3.